It's just that easy. Kind of. But we'll make sure that you have the tools and the information that you need to make it a whole lot easier.
The opinions provided should not be viewed as medical advice. And remember, please consult with your doctor before making any changes to your diet or habits. Thanks again for listening, guys.
I just saw this, dude. Did you know that Georgia State beat Tennessee?
Yeah, that happened yesterday. Or Saturday.
My goodness, bro. I don't even know what Georgia was. Huh?
How did you live in Georgia and you don't know about that?
I mean, well, I was moonlighting yesterday, man. That's a good point. I was busy, man. I was a busy man. Only got time for the late games, really. So
okay. I got you. That makes sense.
Yeah. And Saturday, too. Yeah, it was moonlighting Saturday and Sunday, so a little busy. But yeah, man, like, how the heck did that happen, man? There was no way Tennessee is not as – there was no way Georgia State is as talented as Tennessee. What the heck happened? I remember they were awful last year. They come into Knoxville and just beat the crap out of Tennessee. That's how it is, huh?
Yeah. They're – this guy Pruitt is – He's the head coach of UT, University of Tennessee. Pruitt is.
Oh, he's on. He looked pretty sorry after the game.
He's on the hot seat, man.
and then I saw FSU, like they blew a game spectacularly. I remember hearing about that. Like, my poor guy Willie just can't catch a break, man. I like Willie Taggart, but
FSU didn't blow a game.
They lost to Boise.
They did? I thought they were winning like 31-0. Let me go look it up.
Oh man, what's up? I'm just gonna catch up on this stuff today. They blew it. They got shut out in the second half.
Oh man. That is crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, poor Tagger, but it's all good. I'm rooting for him. Just like I'm rooting for USF, man. Unfortunately, but let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about what happened to Wisconsin. Wisconsin, literally, they put us on their laps and just started spanking us in the middle of the field, and we didn't do a damn thing about it, man. That was such a deflating loss.
Yeah, that's
And then I got to show my face as a USF fan tomorrow.
Yikes. Yeah, bro. I don't know. USF may just need to stop trying to be like a major football program at Florida.
Hush your mouth. We did it before. We could do it again.
Yeah, it seems like that was a fluke, though.
But UCF can do it, but we can't? Nah, man, F that. We're better than them.
No, we're not.
In other aspects.
Yeah, but not in football.
Still better than them. But if they can do it, we can do it. You know what I mean?
All right, bro. We'll see.
And besides that, nothing really else surprising me. Everyone else is rolling. Clemson's rolling. Alabama's rolling. Georgia's going to roll. Yep. Yeah, man. Pretty much no surprise. It's pretty much going to be a standard football season.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, man. I hope FSU pulls it together.
Me too, man.
It'll be interesting. I mean, Alabama looks, you know, dominant again. But this is – I can't believe FSU lost, man.
It did. They got shut out in the second half. I mean, only Boise – it's not like Boise's like, you know, like Georgia – it's not like they lost to Georgia State at home. You know what I mean? Boise's not a bad team, but – clearly, you know, I feel like they're also more talented than Boise State. And they just – I mean, I guess talent just doesn't mean what it used to. You know what I mean? Or maybe you think just like –
Talent's never been the only thing, but it's just – I mean, these things happen. The problem is that there's – maybe there's a style of coaching that just makes you susceptible to these sort of – you know, you see like what's his name? Les Miles would always have trouble – at LSU trying to put enough points up on the board. Mm-hmm. You know, Mack Brown started having trouble. His style of coaching didn't translate to wins later in his career. Bobby Bowden, Steve Spurrier. Like, you gotta, and it, you know, again, those guys, for the most part, are all older coaches. So it's like weird that Willie Taggart is having these issues as a younger coach, but yikes.
Yeah. I know he's gonna do a good job. So I like he's got a good guy. He's a good person. He's got a good. He's, I mean, I feel like he's a good person. You know what I mean? He's legitimately trying to do good stuff. You know what I mean? He's not like, you know, like Bobby Petrino or nothing like that. He's like, he's a good man. He's a good man. But unfortunately,
we don't know if it's true, bro.
What'd you say?
We have no idea if that's true.
I mean, he coached at USF for a bit. You know what I mean? And anyone who had coached at USF, I know, was a good man at heart.
What are you talking about? Remember we had that dude, was it Levitt or somebody else?
Was hey, that was in the past, man. That was in the past. And that was in the past, man. Let's just leave it there.
All right, man.
Good man. Just good man. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I thought it was like a he said thing. Did he really hit that kid?
Yeah, they let him go. I think they did an investigation, everything, found out, you know, he was doing some things he should not have been doing.
Damn. Oh, well, they love me, so I guess stuff like that happens.
Yeah, I mean, in a technical sense, but it probably shouldn't be.
Mm-mm. Maybe that was the beginning of the end, right? Actually, we've never actually, I don't think we've ever won anything, so I can't even say that's like even the beginning of the fall, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't. We're like the what, fifth best football program in the state, man. Maybe we just move on.
I mean, we could still be the fifth best program from many other states.
Huh?
We could be. I bet we could be the fifth best program in Georgia.
Yeah, but there isn't a conference filled with the fifth best football program in each state.
Let me see. In Georgia, it'd be like who? We got Georgia. Georgia Tech would be 1-2. Let's put Georgia State at 3.
Valdosta 4.
Yeah, and then Georgia Southern. We could be Georgia. Actually, I don't even know if we could be Georgia Southern.
No, Georgia, you had Georgia Southern at 3.
They actually put up points against LSU, so. I think we might be screwed there.
Yeah.
Actually put up points. Oh, such a pitiful. Oh, dude, I have serious doubts about Blake Barnett. I told you last year, man. He seems like a good man, man. He's a good man. He's a family man. He seems like he's a good God-fearing man, man. But, I don't know about if his quarterback play is going to lead us to where we need to go.
Bro, what are you talking about? God-fearing man.
Blake Barnett. He's got a family. He goes to church. You know, he got a wife. You know what I mean? He's a good man. But I need a good quarterback. You know what I mean?
Bro, how many times we need to hear about, like, somebody with a secret family to know that going to church and being married? Come on, bro. We've seen enough people come out and find out they're lying to know that the just looking good don't mean you're actually good.
I mean, I didn't say he looks good. I'm just saying, like, he looks like a good man. I'm just trying to not throw too much shade on Blake Barnett, but
yeah, I got all things look good, so that must mean they are good. Nah, buddy. Just like Tiger Woods, he looked like he was a perfect dude. Find out he had like 45 side chicks.
All right. Was it really 45? I can believe
there
that.
Were, there were a lot, man. He had a lot. A whole lot.
Oh my god! So yeah, it took him a while to bounce from that too. He did. It took like what, like 8 years to bounce back? 7 years? That was a heavy hit.
I mean, he didn't win his last Masters until last year. So
this year? No, this year.
Yeah, this year. So he started really making his comeback. It's 2017, and it was 2007 or 2008. So almost a decade.
Was it really? My goodness. Yeah.
Almost a decade between injuries, the the infidelity, debacle, and then just trying to repair his image and his body. Yeah, it was about 10 years, I think.
My goodness. We were just graduating high school when that happened. It's crazy.
Yep. All right, man. We wasted about 10 minutes of time talking about Tiger Woods and whether or not people are fake, decent, or really decent. All right. So for part two of Do You Even Lift, Bro? All right, is that the name we have? Do you work out? Do you work out, bro? For part two, we're going to discuss the neurophysical aspects of fitness, meaning how does exercise make your mind happier? Take it away, Dr. Bramwell.
All right, guys. Dr. Branwell and Doctor. Well, technically, Juris Doc. You'll be a Juris Doctor. Sorry, Branwell G Gordon. And instead, welcome to the show, where you can find us at our articles and our content on healthd.com, healthdy.com, as well as contacting us in our social media links in the description below. Real quick, but first, the episode we're going to talk about, we're going to get into the neurophysical aspects of exercise. So we're going to talk about what neurotransmitters or chemicals play an important role in our overall mental well-being, when they are off, how they can lead to disease and other things that can cause mental health issues. And then we're going to talk about itself, about the benefits and and how you can use exercise to sort of combat mental health. Now, Sai, first of all, let me ask you this, man. As a juris doctor, like, do lawyers call themselves doctors technically, because y'all are juris doctors? Like, or like, what would you hear if a lawyer was introducing himself and say, "I'm juris doctor," blah blah blah.
No, you have so I put JD in my signature. Some attorneys do, especially if you're once you're licensed. So I'm not licensed, I just have my law degree. But for those that are licensed to practice, some of them will use Esquire. The like regular person version is just JD after your name. But you would only really say that you're a doctor of law or have a doctorate in law if you have an actual doctorate. Like the Juris Doctorate is technically a doctorate in law, but you can get a master's in a particular aspect of legal study. Like a lot of people who do tax law will get a master's or an LLM in taxation, which is the legal equivalent of a master's in tax law. And then after that, like if you go into, if you become an expert in constitutional law or something, maybe you become a doctor of constitutional law. But we call all of our professors in law school professor, and that's usually something to teachers who have a doctorate. Like once you get a doctorate, then you would be called doctor whatever or professor whatever. So I guess in an academic setting, you would talk to your teachers as doctors or have someone having a doctorate in the law. You don't call them doctor, but you call them professor, which is essentially, the same treatment in an academic setting. But unless like, one of your professors would be an MD and you would just call them, doctor, whoever.
In the law, and you're a medical doctor. Could they call you Doctor Dr. Bramwell Gordon?
I don't really know what to do. I don't know what to do with that one.
I'm just it was just an off thought, because I was thinking about, like, if I do like a get like I was thinking like if I did it was like a captain of a boat and a doctor, but people have to call me, "I am Dr. Captain Bramwell." You know what I mean? I think that sounds cool a little too much. It sort of sounded cool when I was thinking it in my head. Maybe not so cool now, but I still like it. Dr. Captain. So, just to go back and to touch on just a few key points real quickly from the last podcast of part one. So, the biggest things to get about exercising is, number one, you got to make time for it. So, by that, make sure you prioritize yourself. Number two, know yourself. If you're a morning person, do it in the morning. If you're a night person, do it at night. And then the most important thing is just to get started. Just to start walking, start cycling, just to get out there and start doing something. you need to find the exercise. Exercise will not find you. And then besides that, you need 150 minutes of moderate or about 75 minutes of high intensity exercise along with 2 weightlifting sessions in a week in order to get the recommended amount of exercise. So when it comes to exercising the mind, so let's start talking about our mind itself. So the brain is probably the epitome of biological evolution. You guys think I'm being dramatic, but I am not lying. This human brain has built civilizations. It's connected people. It's allowed us to communicate with language. The human brain is one of the most amazing things that we have ever come across in the world. Now, the brain is a very fickle thing, though. It's a very sensitive organ that needs a certain set of that needs very select things in order to work properly. For instance, the neurotransmitters. So our brain has a bunch of neurotransmitters that regulate its function, and it has a huge impact on our overall mood. If any of these are out of whack, you can get some pretty bad diseases. Now, when I say neurotransmitters, what am I thinking of? So when it comes to our mental health, there are 3 big ones that play a role. Number 1, dopamine. Number 2, norepinephrine. Number 3, and probably the most important one, I would say, is serotonin. So all of these levels, they go up, they go down in our brain, and they all have an impact on how our brain functions, as well as a couple other ones. For instance, like acetylcholine is another one, and melatonin. But with these big 3 of dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin, they play a huge impact on our mood and is the basis of a lot of diseases. So let me start off into a brief description of each one. So the first one we have is dopamine, probably the one you might have heard of the most, if not serotonin. So dopamine is what we call, it's pretty much, how would I describe this? So when people think of dopamine, the biggest thing to think of is feeling good. So whenever we have like a sensation of euphoria, so you know, you eat a very moist steak, or you see your team hit the game-winning home run, or you know, if you know you're making love to your partner after a wonderful date, you get hit with a big dopamine release. The dopamine is your reward, which makes you feel good. And also dopamine is also important in moving and movement disorders. So for instance, Parkinson's disease, where older people they pretty much start slowing down and sort of become like they're moving on just half speed while everyone's at full speed. The problem is that is with dopamine. And when people have depressed mood, a part of it is that dopamine is a problem. So norepinephrine is a little bit different. So you've heard of epinephrine, you know, someone got stung by a bee, ate a peanut, epinephrine saved their life to stop them having an anaphylactic allergic reaction. But norepinephrine is a very important part of the brain. It is part of the sympathetic system. So, you know, the fight or flight. Sympathetic is the fight. Our parasympathetics is the flight. So yeah, guys. So the second neurotransmitter that's important is norepinephrine. So when you think of norepinephrine as the fight drug and acetylcholine as the flight drug. So whenever we're faced with a stress situation, our body will either fight or flight. So by fight, it will turn up our sympathetics using epinephrine and norepinephrine. It'll raise our heart rate, make our vision a little bit better, and it'll help us prepare to get into action. While you have the flight or the parasympathetics that uses acetylcholine, that tells us to rest, digest, to sleep, just to relax if we need to. And they're both very important for humans, and we've developed them. But norepinephrine specifically is important for our overall mood, because without norepinephrine, you're probably going to feel a lot of not active at all, probably lethargic or not wanting to do anything. Just because norepinephrine is one of those sympathetic ones that sort of increase your awareness and your mood. Now the next one, and the last one, the third one, is serotonin. So serotonin is one of the biggest receptors when it comes to some diseases. So for instance, depression, schizophrenia, these neurotransmitters are thought to play a role, and serotonin in particular. So serotonin is extremely important for just our overall general mood. Whenever people have low serotonin, chances are you're going to be more depressed. And so that, so for instance, like a lot of our drugs for depression, they're called SSRIs or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So they make it so that you have more serotonin just chilling in your brain to make your mood feel better. So those are the big three: dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin.
So when we talk about sleep, and you mentioned serotonin,
yep.
The first thing I think of when I hear serotonin is melatonin. Is melatonin related to or a derivative of any of these things, or connected to any of these things?
That is a good question. Let me think about it. I want to say, let me think. Serotonin's a tryptophan. Let me think. Let me look it up real quick. Nope, can't find anything off the top of my head. But serotonin and melatonin, you're right. They are both related to mood. And that's a good question. Serotonin and melatonin related. Can't find anything about their chemical structures. But I will tell you this. Serotonin is generally more important. And so we get more serotonin when we're in, like, you know, very, like, sunlit environments. So during the daytime, our serotonin should be high. While conversely, at nighttime, our melatonin should be high to help us induce us to sleep. As I said, melatonin is also important to our circadian rhythm along with exercise. But as far as they're chemically related, I got nothing for you, brother.
What's a circadian rhythm?
Oh, yeah. So circadian rhythm is just it's like our body's clock that just tells us when to be up, to go to sleep, and just sort of gets us oriented to the day. So how it should work is that when we're awake, we should have more serotonin in our body that tells us to be awake. Or at nighttime, you know, we should have melatonin that our body should be reacting to tell us to go to sleep.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I got you.
Yep.
All right. So the next thing we have, so what does fitness do to increase the presence of any one of those chemicals in our body or our brain?
Okay, that's a good question. That's a good question. So first of all, sorry, I want to ask you a question. Let me ask you this. You ready?
Yeah, I'm here.
Out of all of these three, out of all three of these hormones, which one did I say? Actually, let me ask you this. Which one do you think is the cause of Alzheimer's? Is it dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, or acetylcholine?
Serotonin.
That's your final answer?
Sure.
Close. It was acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is a problem in Alzheimer's.
So what is acetylcholine? How does acetylcholine impact Alzheimer's?
That's a good question. So in general, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'm not a geriatric neurologist that they could probably explain better. But from what I know, when someone does have Alzheimer's, in general, their brain gets smaller and smaller. It's called atrophy. And then we think through that atrophy, somehow they just release a lot of less acetylcholine. And acetylcholine, we believe, plays a big role in memory, especially.
Okay. All right. That seems to make sense.
Yep. But anyway, back to the original point. So pretty much when we do exercise, and we did this, so this is based off a paper. This is from the Brain Science Institute. The drawing connection between brain function and the neurotransmitter connection of, I'm sorry, not brain function, ugh, exercise and its connection to the release of these neurotransmitters. So pretty much it's pretty much agreed that when they did have these animals that did do the exercising, they were measuring the amount of hormones that were released in the brain. Now these hormones are, as I said, I mean, not hormones, neurotransmitters. These neurotransmitters are released in the brain via a bunch of what we call sodium or calcium channels. Pretty much the exercise secretes what we think some hormones, which signals our brain to release more dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine. And we just measure them by exercising in these animals. And pretty much it just shows that exercise has been shown to increase levels of all three of them. it's very important to the fact that for 4 weeks of – so after 4 weeks of moderate exercise, it decreases the – without getting the exercise for 4 weeks, there's a notable decrease in the amount of these hormones for what they're saying according to this paper. But, yeah, pretty much the biggest conclusion that I got from this paper is that serotonin enhanced – so pretty much it's like a – it's pretty much just like a cascade. So, for instance, when the brain releases more serotonin through exercise, that – serotonin increases the amount of dopamine that's released, creates a cascade where you're releasing a lot of these neurotransmitters once you just get started on exercising. So it builds an effect that sort of keeps going up and going up. So the more you exercise, the more you have this cascade, and the more, said, the more balanced your neurotransmitters are, just because, as I said, with the exercise, you're getting your, you're just working out, you're giving your brain slash hormone system slash neurotransmitters a good workout. The exercise increases our, the exercise causes changes in our body that forces our body to react to those changes. And because, and those changes are an increased heart rate, lower blood pressure, and increased heat. It's just saying to our brain to do this stuff. So, you, and there's really no other way to mimic getting those things besides exercise. I mean, maybe you could chill in the sauna, but that's cheating. We don't do cheaters here at healthd.com. Even though I do love the sauna. A recent study has actually shown that 20 minutes in the sauna has been shown to do wonders for your blood pressure and your skin health. You know what I mean?
What is
that? Say that again?
What are the components of the sauna or the sauna experience that were connected to improved, when you say blood flow or blood pressure?
Yep. So yeah, just being in the sauna. So for a couple of things that just being in the sauna, you just start sweating. So naturally, so you start sweating. So when you start, so you lose a lot of sodium and a lot of chloride through sweat. And besides that, it can help regulate people's blood pressure. Besides that, all that sweating is very good for the skin. So all that sweating has that fluid, you know, clean out our pores to get some of that dirt and stuff out of there. And those are, and besides that, it just promotes more blood flow. Whenever there's a higher temperature, our body, the blood in our body flows a little bit better. So more blood gets to, like, you know, your organs and the distal parts of your body, like your toes and your fingers. So it actually really helped for increased blood flow as well.
Okay.
And they're saying, 20 minutes, about 2 to 3 times a week. And and that's where you start getting the effects.
Okay. All right. I got you.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about exercise that boosts energy? Is it connected to any of those chemical compounds that you mentioned as it relates to the brain, or back to last week when we discussed sleep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I said, like, most of these chemicals have a role to play with their mood. But anyways, so all these chemicals have a role to play with your moods. For instance, norepinephrine. It's your alertness, your concentration, and your energy. So I would say norepinephrine is probably the biggest one that comes with energy. And then besides that, when it comes to dopamine, when you exercise more, you release more dopamine. That's where you get more motivation, you get reward, and you get a little bit of pleasure. So whenever you feel good at the gym, when you're checking yourself out in the mirror, just know you got a little dopamine rush that's making you feel good. And then serotonin helps us with our overall general mood and feeling of the day. And it just helps stabilize our mood. You know what I mean? As I said, when you have low serotonin, people do get depressed, anxious, and it can really affect someone. So it's sort of a combination between the three, but in terms of pure energy, I would say norepinephrine is the biggest component of it.
Okay. So is there, just to refresh about the chemical compounds that are improved or that exercise encourages, is it that exercise encourages the secretion, the production, the distribution? I don't know. What is the direct medical connection between these positive or beneficial chemicals?
Let me paint this picture. So pretty much think of this. Exercise, so it says the increased heart rate, the better blood flow. These changes in your body just tells your brain to release more dopamine, norepinephrine, more serotonin. Why do you need this? Well, if you're working out, you're going to be more, your body needs to be more concentrated. So it needs to have some energy and concentration for norepinephrene. And then besides that, you got to have as well as a little bit of serotonin going there too, to make you obsess and, you know, make sure that you're getting each set right. So when you're working, so that physical act of working out is forcing your body to adjust to it by secreting these neurotransmitters for energy, your mood, and stuff like that. And then because you have this increased mood, you're feeling good about yourself, that's what promotes a better mental health, and that you have a better body image of yourself. You feel accomplished. And then you also just feel healthier from a physical standpoint as well.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. You also wanted to discuss some of the social aspects of exercise, but the concern with that would be that everybody's fitness path would be different. So for someone like myself, social interaction doesn't help me with fitness. It doesn't make fitness more enjoyable or more beneficial. So when you talk about fun and social interaction, are you talking about just specific types of people that need to be around other people to work out? Or are you trying to say that there is a medical...
What did I say about fun and interaction?
Well, you were talking about exercise can be fun and social. You talked about, you know, doing things outdoors with teams, dance classes, and things of that nature. Were you saying that as it relates to a medical benefit of exercising with a group of people, or were you just saying that's something to try out if you're trying to get into fitness and exercise?
Oh, no, I'm not saying you need to work out with a group of people. I'm just saying, like, exercise in general just makes you want to get out. I said you can work out in groups with other people. But if you like to, I said, like, friends, I know you and I, we like to work out by ourselves, but even just getting out of the house, going to a new environment, seeing people, you know what I mean? You know, tiny social interactions, holding that door for someone, saying hello, having that quick conversation with that person by the water cooler. Just doing simple stuff like that are good for your mental health, just to get out the house, you know what I mean? And just, get your mind working and getting it to do other things besides sitting around and watching TV. You know what I mean? And the social aspect of the gym is just like the working out is just a side point.
Okay. All right. I got you. All right. So just to recap, part two, Chris went in to a pretty thorough explanation and discussion of the chemicals that are in our brain and our body that impact or improve mood, emotions, and emotions, and sort of shape or can positively influence our sense of self. You were talking about serotonin and norepinephrine, correct? That improve our mood and can positively impact feelings of depression, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then also Chris went into a discussion of how those chemicals, when they are increased in the quantity or the, I guess it would be the secretion or production of those in our brain, how that impacts our energy, and the amount of energy we have just to go about our day generally. So by increasing exercise, we can increase those feel-good chemicals and hormones in our body. And by increasing those feel-good chemicals and hormones in our body, we can give ourselves, help ourselves improve our mood, but also to improve our overall energy level, which relates to last week's episode where we discussed how fitness can help us improve our sleep patterns. What was that? What was the sleep pattern referred to again? The K word?
The circadian rhythm. Oh, I might be butchering it, but circadian. Let's go with that.
Okay. And then, you know, also if you're trying to get into fitness and struggling with it and you're, you know, a social butterfly or want to socialize more, you know, look into some opportunities like hiking in public areas, joining a team or a class, a club. You know, you don't have to, if you're like other people, maybe you want to just work out by yourself, put your headphones in, do your thing and then go. But if you don't want to, you know, you want to be in a group or a class, then do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as we wrap up, like always, we have a couple core questions. So the first question is, and I'm not familiar with, I've never heard of this thing before, but hopefully you have, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
How healthy are Odwalla fruit smoothies?
Okay. You never seen the Odwalla fruit smoothies? They're sort of like in, like, you know, just the fruit section at Publix or like right next to all the juices. I know you've seen them before.
I have no idea what these are.
Okay. So, yeah, they're just little juice smoothies. So, there's like, think of them like Bolt House. You know Bolt House, right?
I have no idea what that is.
Swing and a miss. But anyways, like it's one of these little juices that you can pick up in the juice aisle that they say, you know, it's like it gives the illusion of being healthy just because it's in the fruit aisle and it's a fruit juice made with, you know, fruit ingredients. However, I would not consider them too healthy just because they are packed with sugar.
Are they like naked?
Naked. Yeah, exactly. They're like that.
Okay. All right. I know what nakeds are. I haven't heard of these other ones, though.
Yeah. All of them. Just look at them. If it has over 40 grams of sugar in it, it's not that good for you to drink. So pretty much I know it has a bunch of, like, you know, it does have a good amount of vitamins and nutrients. So as I said, like, it's not the healthiest thing for you. It's not going to kill you, but I would say on a health scale, I would give it about like a from one being not healthy at all and 10 being a healthy. I give it like a 4 or a 5.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So Odwalla fruit smoothies on a health scale of 1 to 10 is a meh. Number 2, is skipping breakfast counterproductive to maintaining good health?
So for instance, for me, I'll skip breakfast most days of the week. Just because I feel like without breakfast, my mind's a little bit sharper. Because once I do eat, I get a little bit tired and just get lagging. But, you know, just a little bit of coffee, a small piece of fruit, and I can be out and I can start my day very well. I don't even need the piece of fruit, honestly. I just live off coffee and water, that doctor lifestyle. Mm. But for me, I said I'm productive throughout the day. And then, you know, I have a decent sized lunch and then a larger dinner after I work out, because as I said, I prefer to eat less throughout the day to get my stuff done and then stay, so I can stay productive and then eat my bigger meals later. So for you, if you feel like you're skipping breakfast and you're jittery, you're tired, you're not in it, then you might be one of those persons that need breakfast and start eating it. But if you feel like you can skip breakfast, you're not missing a beat and you feel, you know, you still feel good, it's not counterproductive. So it just depends on the person.
So as a non-medical professional, there is a big part of me that would push back on that. Obviously, you have way more medical knowledge and expertise mm-hmm. than I ever will. But the benefit of starting the day with breakfast, you know, oats and eggs or something along those lines, is one, it can help to jumpstart your metabolism for the day and put your body in a position of calorie burning and fat burning. There is, again, you know, depending on your age, depending on what it is you're trying to do, how much muscle you're trying to build or maintain, not eating some sort of protein in the morning, whether it's, you know, maybe you're using like a plant-based protein shake or something that's a very clean protein shake, whatever it is, that protein in the morning helps your body to also burn calories and avoid burning up or beginning to feed on some of your protein stores that your body is still using as you're trying to recover from the previous day.
I feel you, but I feel what you're saying, but for me, I feel like more productive without it. Like for me, like I said, like I feel when I eat like a good enough meal when I wake up in the morning, I'm not too hungry. Like usually if I'm hungry, like my body will tell me, but I wake up, I'm not hungry. I feel all right. And I feel like I'm just, you know, doing a shortcut and just drinking some coffee to artificially boost my metabolism. You know what I mean?
Coffee does get you going. Hunger. It's not so much the hunger. It's how your body responds to that first meal and how your body sort of jumpstarts your metabolism and get your body ready. The other challenge you have is that if you have a certain amount of calories or protein that you're trying to consume daily to, again, maintain muscle or build muscle, it is more challenging to do it if you're skipping meals than if you're, you know, spacing out your meals throughout the day, you know, 3 meals and a snack at some point in time. Also discipline if you're trying to develop a meal plan or a meal program that works for you. Starting with breakfast is very good to make sure that you don't have to worry about going through a very busy period in the day that prevents you from getting to your lunch, and then you end up being hungry and starving and then eating junk food or something like that because you're hungry and starving. So from the physical aspect of breakfast, it can be very beneficial to helping you maintain whatever it is you currently have physically that you're trying to hold on to, especially for muscle, which is a it's a that's a big thing if you're trying to build a lot of muscle or if you're older, because older people tend to lose muscle mass. But also if you're trying to, you know, have a particular eating schedule, having breakfast allows you to better maintain that eating schedule just because you don't have to worry about, you know, starving in the middle of the day.
Okay. I do agree with that point. That is a valid point, Sai.
Yeah, but like you said, everybody's different. So if a cup of coffee in the morning is, you know, enough to help you maintain the physique, the lifestyle, and the physical, the level of health that you're trying to maintain or get to, then, you know, do what works best for you. Because everybody's body is a little unique and a little different, as well as your circumstances and day-to-day challenges. So it doesn't make sense to conform to somebody else's challenges when conform to somebody else's standards when
exactly
the life you live is different than somebody else's life.
Heck no. No, man, everyone's got different tastes. So everyone's got different tastes. Everyone just has different requirements. Everyone has to move at their own spot. You know what I mean? So I fully agree with you, Syed.
Yep.
All right. Oh, one more thing. But yeah, as I said, people go out there and get your exercise. I'm telling you, y'all. Just to wrap up the Do You Work Out, Bro series. Mental illness is something that costs America $193 billion in earnings a year, as well as more and possibly untold amounts of heartbreak as well for families and friends as well, too. Just because, as I said, we have a lot of serious mental issues that people are not dealing with. They're thought about it, one-third of students have mental health issues that are undiagnosed, as well as about 26% of homeless people saying that they have mental illness, as well as 46 when you combine substance use disorder into that as well, too. Apparently, about one in every five people in our jail, they also have some kind of mental illness issue. So I said it, guys. This is one of those things where mental illness, while everyone has some form to deal with it, we need to do our part to take care of our bodies. We owe it to our bodies to do it, to get that exercise, to regulate our hormones better so that, you know, we can try and help ourselves out before it spirals out of control. So I said, guys, please get out there, be happy, be healthy, get some exercise, take one step at a time. All right. But y'all, thank you all for listening. Sai, good work, brother.
Yeah, a follow up on your follow up. We are not trying to say, though, that exercise can cure schizophrenia or, you know, something like that. It's more in regards to fitness and health and wellness. If you are dealing with anxiety or sadness, you can use fitness and exercise to help you manage that. However, if you're dealing with clinical anxiety, clinical depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, a a clinical mental health issue, fitness can be a part of your treatment program if you're working with a medical professional and a mental health professional that has determined that would be helpful and beneficial to you. But, you know, as Chris mentioned before, there are various chemical compounds that are encouraged or created in larger quantities through fitness. And if that can help you, that's great. But we're not trying to say as much as improved fitness can improve your sense of self and your mind state, we are not trying to say that fitness and exercise is just going to be some sort of cure for a clinical mental health challenge. Or, you know, if you're dealing with a traumatic experience or a serious issue of suffering that you've gone through in your personal or professional life, going to the gym isn't, you know, a cure-all. But if you can do things to help you, do things to improve those chemical compounds that help you feel happier or positive, those options are available and use them as you can.
Yep, don't be afraid to help. Ask for help, y'all. But again, if you feel like you're, as I said, like exercise can help, but if you do feel like you're feeling symptoms in general, as Saeed says, our advice is not meant to diagnose or treat anything. Go get yourself seen by a doctor or another health professional to get properly evaluated. Peace.
The opinions provided should not be viewed as medical advice. And remember, please consult with your doctor before making any changes to your diet or habits. Thanks again for listening, guys.